Wait for it, right? Brett, you know that feeling, right? Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. What's up to everybody on Facebook too? Trying this whole live thing, right? We're going to go live on Facebook, live on the podcast, live on YouTube, live everywhere. I'm about to head out to New Orleans for the weekend. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of Adam's Rampages lately. You see, what I usually do is I let my notes fill up, right? Is I'll make some notes along the way. And when I think it's filled up with enough time, so I'm not like ranting too long, I do a Adam's Rampage. For some reason, over the last 2 weeks, my notes have went like, they just kept filling up. And Vegas really filled those notes up fairly quickly. Yeah, I got a couple stories coming back from Vegas that, I don't know, fucking tripped me out, to be honest with you. Sad, kind of. It's actually sad. But before I got started, I was trying to bring up this comment. I'm trying, big brother. My big brother is Davis Lowry. Look him up, man. He lives up in Alaska. He's a wild nature man. Love that guy. But I'm trying to find his comment, which I tried to be prepared before. Let me see. Is that it? Oh, I think it may be under the tribe. My gosh. All right. Well, I'll see if I can find it on the tribe, but I'll see if I can summarize. So, Davey, if I don't, I call him Davey. Everyone else knows him as Davis. But if I don't properly say it, I guess he can probably comment on this post or whatever. So what I was going to say is what he commented. Let's see if I can get it. Now, my brother is well-versed in tribal law, etc. He did a lot of work with tribal leaders, etc. My brother was also, he actually got to speak at the Native American Economic Conference as a keynote there. That was awesome. But anyway, so he's well-versed. Now, I got a lot of comments on Blair and Kevin's podcast and a few fucked up emails, to be honest, about what are two little white boys going up to South Dakota for to help. And it fucking blew me away. Here's why it's important. I mean, we can look back at the Civil Rights March too and look at how many other races were marching with the black race and culture as well, right, to help push that movement, right? It takes everybody, and people forget that, you know. So why it's important that that United States citizens go and stand with the protectors, as they like to be called, rather than protesters, is because the corporation is in no violation of a federal treaty, or I'm sorry, the state is not in violation of a federal treaty. You see, the treaties that were made with the federal government. And so in North Dakota, South Dakota, et cetera, there's no, well, there are state treaties, but well, there is no treaty with this state and this tribe, this land, et cetera, which is how the corporation managed to get around those loopholes and be able to do this. So the reason it becomes important when American citizens stand with them is because now it confuses and crosses legal lines. Because now when you have American citizens standing in the way of a state protest, it becomes something extremely different than a sovereign land. You have to understand that Native American reservations are other countries. You have to look at them as another country. Yes, they are in our country, but you have to understand the federal treaties that were made make them sovereign land, which means it's like going to Germany. It's like going to another country. So when United States officers, when citizens, et cetera, go onto these reservations, you are not in the United States. You are in another country, sovereign land. So what is happening is this sovereign land that a federal government had made a treaty with these tribes long ago is being violated because of state law, which isn't there, that allows this corporation to do what they're doing. So when it's simply just the native people that are standing there, it becomes country versus country. It becomes state versus country. It's why you can have water cannons. It's why you can shoot them with rubber bullets, incite violence, etc. But once United States citizens begin to show up, well, then it's a different ball game. You can't just start spraying United States citizens, even though they are. And they did it in 68, and they did it long before that. So it's important that attention is brought to that. That's why I did that show. And for young millennials like that, I know they get a lot of shit about trying to get involved with stuff, but I'd much rather see young millennials getting involved with a movement that infringes on everyone's freedom in this country. Everyone's. It may not be your backyard yet, But it eventually it will come. I just shared a map, actually. I wish I could remember your name, right? I'll get back to you. But I shared a map on my Facebook page, basically about all of the pipelines that are laid out through tribal lands presently. Now, I don't know how long before it's through your backyard and before they leak, and they leak like crazy. So it's not just about clean water. It's not whiny people and some piece of shit posted on the YouTube page that all they'll do is stroke them a big enough check and they'll go home. I mean, you're a piece of shit, man. I mean, whoever you are, you're a part of the problem in which this fucking virus spreads, man. And look, I don't necessarily think it's the men on the front lines that are defending these corporations that are the problem either. I think Kevin said it a lot yesterday in the podcast. It's about understanding those people on that line are trying to survive. They're trying to support their families. They're doing what they're told. They're enforcing certain laws, as they like to say. We don't make the laws, we enforce them. But it's most important to essentially the win comes from switching the riot police. When the military switches over and realizes they're for the people, when that line changes, well, then you have change, because there's no more strong arm anymore for corporations. They can't do that. So, but that becomes dangerous. It's why you see media blackouts on a lot of it. It's why you even see Facebook and a few other people cutting that shit down. But it's important that citizens stand with the No Dapple protest at Standing Rock, because that's what makes it a legal clusterfuck for the state. That's what's imperative. Can you imagine a pipeline wanting to go through a nature reserve in your backyard? This nature reserve that perhaps your kids swim in the stream or something like that, or maybe your kids will or something, and they want to build this pipeline that has a 10 to 16% chance of leakage over the next 15 years, and they want to build it right through your land. Could you imagine going to protest with your community and you're standing there while another United States citizen armed with water cannons and rubber bullets begins to pelt your family as all you try to do is stand up for land that you purchased? You see, that's what people are facing, man. This is intrinsic. This will, I mean, I don't know, it's a harder word than that. It's violating freedoms everywhere. So that's already too long about it. Now, to get into the Vegas stories, I wanted to try to keep my notes to keep me online, but because I'm live on there, I don't have my notes on me, which is fun. Let's see. I'll open with my plane ride and the stewardess. I don't even know if you can fucking call them that anymore. Anyway, so I'm on the plane riding. Stewardess is coming by. I'm a tad sweaty, a little hot, like a glass of water. They got their little cart thing, right, that they're pushing up and down the line. She stops right next to me where the cart's there, and I said, oh, hi, can I have some water? Well, apparently she needed to serve the row just in front of me first, but I couldn't tell. Now, this woman is about 6'2", puts her hand down just like this, puts it about 4 inches from my face, and goes, hold on, sir. Okay. All right. No problem. She serves the row there, leans back, serves the two back rows and the two rows on the other side, leans forward and goes, would you still like your water, sir? And I said, yeah, I would, but can 1 second. And I was looking at some of the drinks they had and I was thinking about ordering it. She poured me about a half a glass of water, hands it to me. And I said, can 1 second, please? And she goes, shall we move on? I said, okay. So she starts to push forward and I turned around. I said, ma'am, could I maybe have a ginger ale too? And ignores me. Promptly turns around, takes her little fucking butt and hits my water glass that's in my hand. Now she walks these aisles for a living. She knows what she's doing. Hits my glass of water. I dump it on myself, down my arm. And I mean, I'm fucking soaked. The people across the aisle saw it. I looked at her, I said, excuse me, ma'am. She turns around, puts her finger in my face and goes, sir, you are on United States flight in America. You will address me with respect. What the fuck? Excuse me? I kind of look back. Now, mind you, if you haven't noticed, then Delta's been putting a lot of flights down lately from people screaming things or some shit like that. So it's been like 10 or so flights they've been quick to just put down and just land, right? Now I'm a little pissed. I'm kind of like, what the fuck? I said, excuse me, but you just knocked water on me. "Again, sir, you are a United States flight." And I'm like, "Bitch, I'm a U.S. citizen. The fuck are you telling me?" I didn't say that. I just smiled. I said, "Okay, all right." She pedals her little bitch ass off. The lady across from me, the other guy across from me, they're looking at me like, "I don't know." I'm like, "I don't know either." She dumps water on me, then tells me to treat her with respect. And reminds me I'm a United States flight multiple times. You know what? Fuck Delta and fuck her. So it gets worse. Mind you, there's a little cute little infant baby like across the alley or across the aisle from me. And it's the first time this little thing's ever flew, right? And it's been pretty good for the first time ever flying. You know what I mean? They got nightmares and shit. And this one's been pretty, it's been a good little kid. And the mom's doing her best. You know what I mean? It's different when a mom's not trying everything. They're just like, fuck it. But mama was trying, right? Little young couple. And anyway, and it was a rough flight too, man. Coming back, actually, was a rough one. And the little baby was going through it. Hell, I was going through it. And this same fucking bitch walks up, leans over, and she goes, "Can you put something in its mouth?" It, for one, and just, excuse me, ma'am. No, just straight, "Can you put something in its mouth? I've heard that if you put Vicks Vapor Rub on it." I'm like, you fucking bitch. I wanted to be like, "Ma'am, you're on a United States flight. You will treat an infant with respect, you fucking bitch." That's what I wanted to say. But I didn't. So the same lady then treats this lady like that. And I said, my God, fucking, what's going on in her life, right? So anyway, the flight lands. We're walking out and she's sitting there up on the side, right? I don't want to hold anybody up, but I don't like bad energy either. I don't like that kind of, right? So as we're walking out, I kind of pop over to the right side and slip in so I can talk to her. She's in one row of the seats. I'm right in another. And I said, "Excuse me, you know, ma'am, perhaps we had a miscommunication. Can I tell you kind of what happened in my perception?" She proceeds to stand up from the row like this to show her like dominance or power or something. I don't know what. And she goes, "Fine, I'll listen." "All right." I said, "Explained my perception. This is what I had done. You know, I don't understand." "What, were you having a medical issue? Because if you were, it was your job to tell me if you were." "What? No. You knocked water on me and then walked by." And mind you, through the rest of the flight, when, you know, they come by to get your trash, she would come by to get my trash and I hold the cup up and she'd go and walk by. Like, what the fuck? My wife's sitting next to me like, "What the fuck?" I'm like, "What the fuck?" So I tried and I'm like, can we please? Angry as shit again. And I couldn't help it. I looked at her and I was just like, you know, I'm a fucking United States citizen. What if I was a veteran? What if I was somebody else? You know nothing of my story. And you spew this hatred and this aggression towards somebody. And I said, you know what? It's okay. For the most part, somebody probably hurt you recently that maybe I remind you of. Or something else. But the idea that you could yell at an infant, well, that's karma you don't let go of. Have a good day. It was fucking terrible. I couldn't believe it. Now, the story's going to get worse. The second story. This is going to get worse. I said fuck PC, so I am. It'd been a good night in Vegas. We're hanging out. Kind of calling it a night. Stopped by a CVS to get some water. Definitely needed some water. And I'll set the scene for you. It's about 2:30 in the morning. On the strip. CVS. Walk inside. There are two guys on those little scooters. They're probably, I don't know, young 20s, something like that. But they're just playing around, right? They're on the little fucking scooter things that they had. They were being funny. So they get in line. We grab our water. We eventually get in line. Ooh, sounds like I could use some water too. Coffee, excuse me. Anyway, so about the time we kind of grab our water and stuff and we're starting to walk up, this homeless man walks in. Now, I'm going to have to describe and tell you that the race is here, okay? So a white homeless man walks in, and it's just cold as shit outside, man. The guy's just trying to get warm. You know what I mean? That's all he's fucking trying to do. And he's very kind, walks by us, just, hey, I'm in no rush, you know? Nice guys. So anyway, we're getting in line. About the time we start to file in line, a group of four African-American girls walk in. And I'm saying girls, but they're probably in their early 20s. There's a reason I have to tell you. They're racist. And we go for their race of the people. So you'll see why. And, you know, they're dressed in club attire. You could call that. Anyway, so they spread out around. They're very loud, too. You can't help but notice at 2:30 in the morning, it's a quiet store and a group of people walk in very loud and laughing. And they spread out around the store, moving real fast, etc. And then there is this little old Asian lady working the register all by herself. And I remember, there's reasons I'm pointing out the races here. And anyway, they're walking around the store. The guys in the scooter they're taking their time. It's kind of starting to get annoying because they won't even get out of their scooter to put their stuff up on the counter. But anyway, so as she's helping them pack up, she's looking up at the mirror and she's looking. And I can't tell if she's looking at the homeless guy or if she's watching the group of five or four girls. I can't really tell, right? But I'm always observing the world. So at any time when I can observe it, I'm watching. And so I'm just observing that, and I can't tell. Well, she picks up the phone, and she says, "Can I have security to the front, please?" And I said, "Oh, shit, what'd she see?" So I turn around. About the time I turn around to look, me and one of the young ladies caught eyes. Well, we caught eyes about the time she was looking back. Well, in her guilty conscience or something like that, she goes, "What you looking at?" And I said, "Excuse me?" And then she mumbled some bunch of shit I couldn't fucking hear. And she comes to the front. Her other friend was by me already. And I said, "I honestly didn't hear anything you said." She says, "What are you looking at me for? Why are you looking at me like that?" And I said, "Looking at you like what? I turned around and we happened to catch eyes. The lady here called security and I turned around to see what perhaps she may be calling about." And I said, "Well, there was a homeless man that had walked in and he was just standing over in a corner trying to be warm. And there's mirrors everywhere, right? You could see him." And so I was trying to figure, why would she do that, right? I mean, I didn't steal anything. I didn't. We walked in, grabbed a water, and came to the front, so it wasn't long. So it's not like the guys on the carts were trying to get out real fast, right? They were hanging out, taking their time. So it had to be one of those two, I'm assuming. Well, I explained that she had called security. Well, this young lady then looks at me, and she says, "It's because she's a fucking racist." I said, "What?" She goes, "Yeah, you know she called the cops because we're fucking black. She called the cops because five black girls walked in here, and that's exactly what she did. That's exactly what that stupid little Asian lady would do." Yeah, right. "The stupid little Asian lady" is what she says. And I said, "Wait, how can you assume that's you?" I said, "There's also a homeless man, vagrant looking, that walked in as well. I just looked back to see who might it have been." "Oh, and you looked at me, didn't you? You just happen to be the first person I locked eyes with." "Well, we get that all the time. It's because we're black. We can't go into any store without security being called." Okay. We pay for our stuff. Walk out. Got to call an Uber because it's too fucking cold. I don't want to walk anymore. Wait a second to get my Uber. As we're out front, here comes the four or five girls. About the time they exit, they start unloading their fucking pants and jackets and pockets. They pulled out jelly, Pringles, nail polish. They pulled out fucking all of them. All of them had fucking shit. You could see shit stuffed in their tight pants, and they were kind of running out to their car. "Ah, fucking bitch, da, 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 da." Ran the fuck out, stole a whole bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? How the fuck can you stand next to me and say that racist shit about an Asian woman and then admit and accuse people of being fucking racist because of your skin color? And then you fucking walk out with a whole bunch of shit you stole. I'm sorry. There was a moment where I wish I was fucking black for a second so I could have been like, "It's fucking you. You're the fucking problem. You start the fucking shit, you fucking get paranoid, and you do the fucking shit as if, well, because we're called that, It's okay to fucking do that. You're the fucking problem. It blew me the fuck away, man. It blew me the fuck away. I just was like, what the fuck? Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. You know, you try to fucking be... I'm sorry with all the fucks, too. All the people worried about my fucking curse words. Change your fucking perception. Force your fucking beliefs on me. My fucking words hurt your feelings. Somebody commented, too. Well, people would listen to you if you didn't use so many F words. What the fuck? All right, so I'll change how I talk so your perception of what feels good can feel better. Is that what I'm supposed to do? Because you deem a word to be bad? What the fuck? Like, can you... I'm just trying to get myself off that fucking story. But it fucking blew me away. Another thing that blew me away. As we experience Vegas and all its Vegasness, right? Shiny lights, clinking machines, the signs of millions of dollars everywhere, right? Hotels that look like castles and a land of holy shit, right? Where you just go, what the fuck? Wow. Wow, what a species. Holy shit. Obsessed much? And what I couldn't help but notice were on the corners of Vegas, poverty. All on the outskirts of this glitzy, romantic, beautiful, lit up money, hopes, and party dream city is just sheer poverty. With such abundance located in one city to be outlined in so much poverty is something else that just, it threw me back for a minute. It threw me back for a minute to see Army and Marine veterans asking for food on a corner of the Stratosphere Hotel where I was just at upstairs, and for $21 had all the buffet from around the world, including crab legs that I could fucking eat. And just downstairs from all that, are men and women that did sacrifice what they believed at the time was just and need help. And in that abundance, we play, we rejoice, we celebrate, and many times we don't even notice around us. We don't even notice the poverty that's around us. And I think the dude on Game of Thrones said it best of why people avoid looking at the homeless and people in poverty. Is because it reminds us that's who we all are. Beneath the perfume, beneath the silks, beneath the shoes, beneath the makeup and name brands, we are just that. And so when you walk by homeless people, perhaps you have a cognitive dissonance that keeps you away. Perhaps you're the one that thinks I can't give them a dollar to enable them. Perhaps you're the one that says I'll at least give them food, but I won't give them money because they might do something with it. We all have our reasons for why we do or don't help somebody. And that's not my argument. My thought was, how in such abundance could we live in this concentrated area of food and money and rooms? You know, not every hotel room in that fucking place is booked. You know it. But yet I walked by multiple people with a blanket or two on the corner, and I'm freezing. I'm freezing so much I want to take an Uber. I'm a Florida boy, but what the fuck? It was hard not to go to Vegas and leave on some what the fuck. It was hard not to look around and think about Dr. Jack Cruz and all his lights and blue lights ideas that are draining us. I thought about, you know, if Dr. Cruz was in a casino, it would probably be hell to him with all the lights, the clinging, the no sunlight. When you take all that in, and, you know, I used to talk about where I say in a speech sometimes, you know, one of the things that turned me away from the nightclub business in that one random night that I talk about in my book is the lights came on at the club one night on accident. And that was a fucking vision I couldn't get out of my head anymore. I couldn't. I went home that night and it fucked with me. And you're looking at, like, when you're in a club and it's fucking 2 o'clock and it's banging hard and fucking you turn the lights on, take the music away. What the fuck are people doing, man? And it tripped me the fuck out. It tripped me out. And I was like, holy shit. Oh my God. What the fuck is going on? Then, you know, seeing something like that. So Vegas is a lot like that. You walk the strip at night and you think, wow, we can build some shit. I mean, when I was walking out of the Venetian a couple of times, right, I would stop and I listen to a lot of history, right? I'm deep into like World War One, two, I mean, all the way back to 1500s, 350. I'm deep, Dan Carlin, I love you. But when I go back to that and I'm listening to that, I tried to walk into like, say, the Venetian, right? Or even Caesar's Palace. And imagine walking up to that in 1500 AD or BC or something, right? And when you're walking up in 350 and you'd never seen any architecture, cities or anything built like that. And could you imagine walking up to only this person named Caesar you had heard about? And then giant statues everywhere. And you're walking up like, what the fuck? It's amazing when you approach that stuff like that. And when you see the lights and all this shit. But Vegas is a lot like the club. Because during the day when the lights are on or when the sun's out, it looks weird. It looks like a faded graffiti painting that looks cool as shit under black light. But during the day, it's got this dinge to it of misshaped architecture and misplaced coloring and things that just look off. You know, we can do such amazing things like build those cities. I stand in awe of that shit, man. It's fucking wild. I mean, I'm not saying what you're supposed to do or should do. I'm just pointing these things out. You know, I talk a lot of things on my podcast. I cover a lot of stuff. I voice a lot of opinions as if there's some concrete belief that I'm hard up on. But, you know, the truth is I'll push and push and push. But truly, I'm the first one to go, hey, white flag, you're right. That's a good point. You know, because the harder I can push some other idea, they're going to push harder to give me their best competence. We all get smarter, but I'm quick to be like, all right, yeah, that's a good point. So for me, whether it's about having solutions or anything, but merely pointing out observations to which I see and let you do the takeaway from what your belief about that is. You know, there is no truth, right? As I like to say, our truth is our perception. So, I mean, for some people look at those stories and go, yeah, it's fucking life. It's fucking people. I think both of those people are the problem. The people that act like that and do that, and the ones that just play it off and say, that's just human nature. That's part of kind of saying the line that I fucking can't stand when people say, which is, that's just who I am. You ever said that shit? That's just who I am. If you say that shit and you have a friend, I hope they kick you in the fucking shin. Don't say that. When you say things as concrete as and naive as that's just who I am, what you're really saying is I'm too naive enough to want to grow or change. So that's just who I am. And my acceptance, AKA, is really apathy. Because anything not growing is dead, right? So to say that's just who I am, you're making a statement of concrete dead. I won't grow because this is who I am. I won't change. I won't morph. Just deal with it. I'm not even humble enough to want to analyze anything that we do, right? Or that I do, right? So somehow that was all fucking connected. The last part I was going to talk about is psychedelics and marijuana. You hear the audience, right? Yeah. Well, I was obviously in some deep thought and deep places this weekend in Vegas. And, you know, I started walking down the ideas of edibles and psilocybin for treatment, et cetera, et cetera. And if anyone has been a fan of the Cognitive Rampage or knows me personally, et cetera, you know I am a big fan of both marijuana and psilocybin for multiple uses, multiple reasons. This isn't where I'm going to list something on a meme that tells you all the awesome things about weed and mushrooms, okay? That's not what this one's about. You all know that already. You're Tribe of Change members. You're watching this. You fucking get it. And I get it. I've watched it. I use it. It helps me do things. It sparks things. It's creative. So I use it for multiple reasons, right? But I got to say this shit. Is it for everybody? You know, sometimes I say that one of the experiences before you die on this planet that you got to ride, the roller coaster you got to experience is the roller coaster of psychedelics, of mushrooms, specifically psilocybin. You know, because it's just a place. It's an experience like a, I don't know, it's like almost going your whole life and not getting and not fucking. or not making passionate love, or one of those two things, right? Because there's a difference between fucking, you know what I mean, and passionate love. So, you know, if you could go your whole life, you'd want to experience both of those. And I would say that a psilocybin spiritual experience, I know a lot of people hate that word, but in that experience, if you will, is a comparable close. But when we started to get into the idea of treatment for it, now, mind you, I'm way for anything natural substituting something that's synthetic from Big Pharma. You all know that. Hashtag chemical incarceration. You all fucking know my stance there. So I have to take the conversation a little deeper, right? I couldn't get out of this part. So, you know, we can't say they're for everybody, man. I mean, we can't. You know, I've talked to some of the best minds in drugs on this show, that like Dr. Carl Hart, right? The idea that drugs aren't the enemy. Totally fucking agree. You know, we can't demonize the drug, right? That I totally on that same point. And, you know, he mentioned a few times about if somebody wants the damn, you know, Oxycontin, they should be able to get it or have it, right? And then I followed by saying, but if we do that, you know, the help has to be offered just as equal, which it's not. So we can't just make everything open and available if we can't then make the help for it when it can or does get dangerous readily available for people, even more so than jail, prison, etc. So when it comes to things like psilocybin, we got to make sure we still stay intelligent, intellectual about it, right? Like MAPS does. MAPS keeps it to a very professional level, you know, set and setting, etc. They're using it for treatment. Julia Ruckledge that was on here, using the minerals for treatment. It's about the approach for treatment. Now, you can also go outside of treatment, because I think just about any psilocybin experience will give you what you want. That's what I think, right? If that's what I believe, so possibly that's why it happens. If you want to eat your psychedelics and what you imagine is the rave or some shit like that, or you want to do some music thing, well, they'll give you that, you know. But if you come to it for questions, experiences, an open mind, etc., they give you that. And I've seen it. I mean, I hate to say cure, but fuck, I've seen it on veterans do some amazing things that 20 something years of therapy and pharmacology just couldn't even come close to. And marijuana the same, right? Marijuana does miracles. They're both. But we can't go as far to what the drug companies did too and use words like I just said, called the miracle drug, right? When they put out Suboxone, they came out, oh, the miracle drug. No, it's not. It's not for everybody. It's not a miracle drug. We got to assume that some people, trust me, it's not for everybody. Some people just assume, well, yeah, there's the obviouses, but are there really? Remember my mental health background, so I have to sometimes approach that with those mental health baby gloves, if you will. So when I look at psilocybin, we got to be careful about saying the miracle drug, right? People don't die from it. I get that. Trust me, I'm well versed. People don't die. I know the arguments both sides, because I'll never forget what that little old man told me. If you can't argue both sides of a story, well, then you're naive. Both sides of a point. See, a lot of people can argue one side of a point and believe themselves to be fully competent. And the truth is, you have to be able to make the opposer's argument just as well as you make your pro argument. Otherwise, you are naive. So I'm making this other side of the argument, attempting to. So if somebody that's suffering from fully diagnosed bipolar, which by the way is touchy ground for me, because I'm not big on diagnosis at all, right? I'm not, which is weird, because I also have believe in a diagnosis that's missing called athlete's depression. But overdiagnosis is the major problem. So when you look at something like bipolar, this is probably that and ADHD or probably or ADD are probably the most overdiagnosed mental health disorders known to man, probably. So, I mean, bipolar is very, very rare in its full form, but real conveniently, they put mild, moderate, right? They spread it out, right? That just means more people fit in the spectrum. So the DSM that came out now is a whole revision. They just widen the spectrum so more people qualify for dope. That's part of why I quit the psychology game. So as the pills came out, as this starts to come out, you know, let's take a real bipolar person, right? Which is a terrible, terrible, terrible diagnosis when it's in its full spread. And truthfully, one of the most dangerous diagnoses on the planet, actually. Many people get this wrong. If you ask somebody, what is the most dangerous diagnosis? Safety reasons why. You hear odd things. You hear things like schizophrenia, et cetera. But schizophrenia actually isn't very dangerous, which is a misconception. You'll hear things like borderline, antipersonality, et cetera. But truthfully, a bipolar diagnosis in a manic state, that is the most dangerous mental health diagnosis, other than obviously psychotic or, I don't know, anyone in the United States government leaders, maybe. They kill a lot of people. But anyway, so we have to then say, if someone with bipolar doesn't know they have it or has experienced symptoms of this, et cetera, and then goes to a psychedelic. I don't know if you've ever played craps at Vegas, but the reason they call it that game, there's a reason they call it that shit. You don't know what you're walking into. And especially if you're schizophrenic or schizoaffective. Schizoaffective is another diagnosis that is overused, but is also seen. Schizoaffective essentially means that you are schizophrenic, diagnosis fully, but you are also affected by a mood disorder like depression, anxiety, etc. So a schizoaffective person, and mind you, to cover schizophrenia, just so people aren't confused, schizophrenia isn't about multiple personalities, right? That's not even a diagnosis anymore. Schizophrenia is about generally auditory and visual hallucinations, right? Doesn't have to be both. It can just be auditory, can sometimes be visual. And what you have to understand is the difference between an audio and a visual hallucination and what you may have experienced in life is, have you ever been in a room and looked to the corner like you thought somebody walked by or you thought you heard something? But remember, what you thought you heard was in your head. The audio was coming inside out. Someone diagnosed with schizophrenia, the audio comes outside in. What they hear that's not really there is coming from over there, right? What they see is literally in the front sometimes. So those are major diagnoses, right? So if psilocybin becomes treatments for these, I don't know, right? Maybe it is. Shit, we have a long way to go. But we have to be aware. We already know that these people that are already on the edge, and especially if you're depressed sometimes and you're already on the edge, I mean, you can look up the research. If you're already on the edge about reality itself, walking down roads such as strong as DMT, dimethyltryptamine, which is the main active ingredient in all psychedelics. Anyway, you have to be careful of that anyway. So we gotta at least be intelligent enough to know, yes, they can do amazing things. Yes, it's natural. Thank God it's breaking chemical incarceration. Yes, I've seen it cure people. Holy shit, it's everything. But we can't go as far to start screaming, it's the miracle drug. It may be the best drug, right? It may be the best drug, right? But we can't go as far to be as naive as the other side that used to say marijuana and psilocybin would kill you, that still keep it on the scheduling patterns that they do. We can't go as far as to be as stupid as the Suboxone creators that put, you know, the Holy Cross on the very first one on Joe Rogan, man. I never got to follow that up with you, Joe. When Jamie pulled up the Suboxone pill that I was talking about, he pulled up the second edition, which had the little sword on it. They switched to the sword. You would have to go deeper to find the actual little Christian cross, which was on there, which is why the marketing team called it the miracle drug, by the way. That wasn't bullshit. So, and it was a mustard company. So we have to then go that far and talk about the other side of it, right? Because I've seen some people at festivals eat some wrong shit. And I don't know if you've been to those festivals before, but when they do, right? It can be scary. It can scare those around them too. This is why MAPS is so important. Even John Hopkins has started some studies with the investment of Tim Ferriss, with the funding of Tim Ferriss. So thank you for that. MAPS has been doing it since 1981 with Rick Doblin, and Brad Burge is a new addition. He was on the show. But we have to be honest, because they're actually using MDMA right now in couples therapy. They're testing that as we speak. Psilocybin is something else that needs to be shared, you know. And part of my argument, really, when I used to go hardcore at 12 steps, et cetera, was, look, we just need to be able to offer anything and everything. If people want help, well, then help should be just as easy to fucking get as my Suboxone, my methadone, my Xanax, or any fucking, not mine, but any fucking thing else that you're shoving down my throat to tell me I need to get better, which is really just a Band-Aid, which eventually my pain receptors increase, which means I need more. You know, the whole just say no, because once you do one shot of heroin, you need a bunch of them. But they don't tell you that shit when they hand you a couple Percocet, when they hand you a couple fucking Vicodin, right? That you're going to need a couple more the next day. You're going to need a couple more the next day. I mean, this is the shit they don't tell you, but we have to be honest about what we're really doing here. And I just want to be clear that, you know, I don't think it's for everybody. I don't think marijuana and I don't think psilocybin is for everybody. Bad trips are real. Some people don't come back mentally. Some people snap little wires. It's serious. And if you're already on the verge of mental health, serious mental health issues, you got to be careful, because when you are, that's when you tend to go that way, right? When you feel like you've exhausted all your resources, et cetera, and then you start to go that way. So generally, when we are on the cusp of a life transition, a mental health transition, that's when we are looking for help in other places and in other areas, which means that's when you have to be even more cautious about what you're reaching for. Once you start to reach outside of the miracle workers you've already been given, which is your mind, your body, you've been given that already. And so you have nutrition, you have movement, you have so many things that you can utilize to fight against that, you know. When you go to reach outside of those miracle workers, you have to be cautious, even if it is mushrooms, even if it's DMT, even if no one's ever died from it, even if, right? If we're going to be as cautious about that with antidepressants, which not a fan, but it does help some people, right? But they still become Band-Aids. I mean, but to also defend the other side, you can't be so hard-headed. And so unexperienced to where then you could speak to say that psilocybins are drugs, right? I happen to agree with Dr. Carl Hart that drugs is a bad word. It's like saying I like sports. You like curling or rugby, right? It's very vague. I mean, this is a fucking drug, right? Caffeine. So, I mean, for the other side, you also can't stand on these 1940-something, 50s beliefs that you got passed down, that the devil lives in cannabis and psilocybin is something from some weird evil place and you're a junkie, and stop spreading the dumb lies that once you taste a drug, you're hooked for life. I mean, these are naive. This is the other side of the naivete. Is that how you're supposed to do it, right? Give a fuck. So, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I won't smoke weed or I won't eat that or I haven't, as if it's this accomplishment, as if they've gone through life and they've managed. I've never smoked a joint in my life. I've never had a beer. I've never. Who the fuck? Wow. You must be so bent up, dude. That's all I can think, man. You know, that's that same argument. But, you know, with kids, I get a lot of emails sometimes about kids and what I think about marijuana with kids, what I tell my daughter, et cetera. My daughter's been educated. I've almost shown her any other drug that exists. I've walked her through exactly what they are, what they do, what they look like. I mean, that little girl knows. And she comes home sometimes when she hears kids talking about what they think drugs are or do. And she just laughs. And she's just like, that's totally not even true. So, you know, I would tell you that with your kids, take the competence route. Do not hold them back from this "it doesn't exist" thing. Only junkies do drugs. Only bad people do that. You need to not do that. If you do that, you're going to walk them into it, because one day if they do try marijuana and they don't die, or they do try something a little harder and they don't freak out and lose their mind like you've been telling them, well, then they're going to wonder what else you're fucking lying to them about. I mean, you already lied to them about Santa, the Easter Bunny, and a whole bunch of other shit. And now all of a sudden you're going to tell them that marijuana is going to kill you. And then they try it and they're like, holy shit, I can actually deal with my parents. So you got to go the competence route, because, you know, curiosity breeds anxiety. The only way to relieve anxiety then becomes filling the curiosity. And kids are filled with anxiety today from school, test grades, college, you fucking parents, us fucking with them. So they're filled with anxiety already, and they're young and growing, which means their curiosity is redlining. Their anxiety is redlining. So what happens? The only way to begin to let down some of that anxiety is what? Through letting out the curiosity, which is why kids make a lot of mistakes. Anxiety and curiosity, redlining at the same time. They can't relieve the anxiety because they can't quit school. They can't divorce their parents. They can't get out of the fucking social constructs that have shaped them into being some voice or America's Got Talent person or supposed to be. They're stressed the fuck out. So, and they're curious. So you cure curiousness with competence. Here is what a fucking mushroom looks like. Here is what marijuana really looks like. Here's how you could smoke it. Here's if you ingest marijuana. Here's the difference. You know how many kids don't know that there's a difference, that if you ingest marijuana, it is actually a fucking psychedelic? Most people don't know that. They're like, oh, I don't like to smoke it, so I just eat it. Have you ever eaten or smoked marijuana before? No. Okay, well, you shouldn't do an edible first. All right. I mean, so a lot of kids don't even know that. So bring them the competence when it comes to that and give them both sides of the story, because then they won't be naive either. So as we begin to, you know, I love to call this generation. I think we're moving almost away from this chemical incarceration to this era that I'm kind of calling cultivated. Is the awareness is getting out there about the pills, the chemical incarceration. These things are starting to get out there, and the other things are starting to flourish, right? We're coming back to natural, organic, homemade, handmade, psychedelic treatments, meditation, right? We're coming back to this holistic era, and it's like cultivating again. We're cultivating the human evolutionary experience, right? As we're moving seemingly backwards, right? But technology moves forward, right? We're almost going back to local farms, et cetera, away from the industrial farming complex and everything else. And as this transition moves, as we transition into this new cultivated metaphysical world of wherever the fuck we're headed, with ideas of immortality being talked about in all seriousness of science by, say, 2045 or more. I mean, these are conversations that were just, you know, shots in the dark, a bunch of hippies on cocaine talking shit, and it's fucking real. Like, it's crazy possibilities of even to consider it. I mean, the stem cell stuff I did with Mike Van Thiel, and that shit blows my mind still. It's amazing. We have to still be wary and just try to stay competent on both sides of the story. We can't stay hard-headed about any of it. And if anything I say, even when I say, that's why I notice myself, if someone says something to you or you read a headline or something like that, and your first response is hell no. No, that's not even true. Da, da, da. If this is your first response and you lack the competence behind that, that's a great place to start to get smarter, is when you do find yourself going, nope, not at all. Yep, not at all. When you find yourself doing that, remember, if you can't agree with me that there is no truth, because if you ride a roller coaster and you tell me it wasn't scary, I ride the roller coaster, you tell me, and I tell you it was scary as shit, who's telling the truth? Right. Truth becomes perception, right? It's in the eye of the beholder, the experience that we can shape it, but that also becomes our superpower to be able to shape it how we want to with our thoughts. Now, reframing helps, but we got to know what we believe. So if you find yourself simply reacting to something in this Manchurian candidate response, this Manchurian response of going, nope, can't, won't listen, don't talk to me, already decided, that's just who I am. Start there. Question why you believe that, why you think that. Find more competence, because when you can get self-competent, you become self-confident, not arrogant. There's a difference. And then when you work in the humility into it, well, then you can grow. You can get more competent. You can open up. And maybe we stop seeing stewardess like that projecting anger. Misled, miseducated young girls trapped in social constructs of naivete and abundance built on top of poverty. Because that's what Vegas is. And I've been watching this history thing by Oliver Stone, and it's really hard not to see the fact that the abundance of this country was built on the backs and the poverty of many around this world. Many that lack the enthusiasm to want to find out the competence and say it. But I'm off to New Orleans. I'll be taking care of you. The second revision of the Cognitive Rampage will come out in January, along with the audio book. A lot of guests are done for the year. A lot of people took off on vacation. Got a few more guests coming up before the end of the year, but we booked some big names in January and February as well. I'm really looking forward to talking to Dr. Gabor Mate, January 11th next year. Really been looking forward to chatting with him. Stephen Kotler will be coming back on. Maybe we didn't, but I was just spreading the news. The story that I said I was going to talk about on the podcast, I'm just going to post to a link on the podcast. It's a really long story. Well, I say really long to read on a podcast. Please, please read it. My daughter sent it to me. She didn't write it. Read it. It will trip your mind out. It talks really about the difference of what we face in this dualism society today. It's worth it. If it's the end, maybe not. But we came back on. We lost signal, but we popped back on. Yeah. Love you. Off to New Orleans.